Hello and welcome to episode 341 of the Rallo and Slappy Show. Today is January 23rd, 2023. I am Rallo McFlugel and with me is my co-host Slappy Jones. Show notes page for this episode will be mcflugel.com/341. And this will also be Get On Zero episode number 32. But before we get into that, we of course have to talk about what do we need to talk about first, Slappy?
Well, there's not really much news. Eagles won, obviously.
Right.
So they're heading to the NFC Championship next week, which we told you this was going to happen, you know, many moons ago. Dominating performance, as expected.
Yeah. I wasn't following kind of what people were saying and stuff, but did anyone actually, and I know this is easy to do in hindsight, but like we said, we already predicted it though. But did anyone ever really think the Giants had a chance? I mean, they beat number two seed, but we were also critical of the Vikings all year for being like, eh, despite their record, just for whatever reason, not seemingly that impressive. And
yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what the line on the game was. I don't know what the bettors were saying. The Eagles dominated them twice during the regular season. The last time they played didn't really matter.
Right.
Starters weren't playing, but still, it's the NFL. You take wins when you get them, and dominating wins are always nice. And so a good win for the birds.
Yeah. Yeah. So get the 49ers, rookie quarterback. I don't know. They got to come to Philly.
Yeah, so good luck to you.
Yep.
How are the Flyers doing? Still winning?
I saw they lost last night, but overall they've been like pretty
Sixers
good.
Sixers been playing well too, but I don't know how they've done the last week either.
I don't know. It's funny with the Flyers. The beginning of the year, I wasn't really able to watch them, and then the middle chunk of the year so far, I was able to watch them, and they like didn't win at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I'm not able to watch them again that much, and they're winning again.
They seem to be playing well. Yeah. So
yeah, I guess I need to never watch them anymore. That's how that works, right?
Yeah, I do think that their record and their performance depends on whether you're watching.
Yes.
I think that's been proven.
I can't deny it. So I guess we'll continue. Phil, we notice a change.
Yeah. Did you buy your Ivan Provorov jersey?
Yeah. So I didn't follow that story, but.
No, I Rallo and I have purposely not been following the news. We'll just throw that out there.
We've been on Twitter and stuff, so we, you know, I assume though, if you're wondering where we are on Twitter but hear us here each week, I would imagine that you don't think we're like dead or something wrong.
Yeah. We're here.
But yeah, it was kind of interesting. I heard that it was a couple a week ago or so, the Flyers had a game. Was it like Pride Night or something? I don't even know.
I don't know. Was that an NHL thing? Was that a Flyers thing? Was that this new woman they hired for the DEI for the NHL, which is just complete? That has to be for some kind of federal loan or tax exemption or something. Like, it makes no sense.
What is it? DEI?
Yeah, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. It's an acronym. If you go to pretty much any company's website, you'll find it on there somewhere. Whenever these companies all name it the same thing, you know there's something bigger at stake. And I'm sure there's people who are listening who are like, yeah, World Economic Forum talked about it. I don't know. But it's really creepy and really weird. But if you start looking for DEI, every single company has it on their website somewhere. And they're DEI initiatives, and they hire someone and probably pay them $150,000 to go focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion and find out what the company is doing to get more. And they probably have a DEI score. I don't know. But Anyway, the NHL is one of those organizations that is doing it as well, and they hired some black chick to head up DEI. I don't know. I sports are funny because there's not much else in the world. I mean, there's other high stake jobs, but it's pretty much merit based. Like, they don't really care what color you are if you can play.
Right.
They just don't. Like, that's what's great about sports.
It's funny.
Yeah, and like, I kind of get it if they're like, well, let's invest money in the inner cities and. But like
if the NHL thinks that there are inner city black kids that are great athletes that they're not getting to play hockey because of, or they're not playing hockey for whatever reason, and they want to try to get them to play hockey because they think that they're missing out on a talent pool. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, go invest your money. It's just, the thing is, like, at least in the United States, maybe outside of a few areas, hockey's a rich person's sport. Like, you need to have rink time, you need to have the equipment, you need to be there. Like, if you live in the Northwest Territories, you can go out your front door and play hockey.
Right.
And, you know, around here, all you need is a hoop and a basketball. And you can play basketball. Baseball, you get a stick and a ball, you can go play. You know, hockey, you need ice, and that's expensive. And that's why, I mean, traditionally, even there's a lot of Americans in the NHL, but what percent of the league do you think is American?
5-10%?
I would have put it, yeah, that's probably right. It's probably about, I would think a little more than 10, but not a quarter.
Right.
Right? There's a lot of Europeans, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of Canadians.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably a little more than 10%.
Yeah, it's just not an American game. Like, it's, you know, you got to have ice. And yeah, we don't have lots of ice unless you pay a lot of money to get it. So I don't know. I don't know where this initiative is going. That's why I think it's kind of just like box checking for some kind of benefit, you know, because
what in the world could this woman possibly be doing day to day?
I don't know.
And when you're like someone who has a real job in the NHL or something, and you get a calendar invite in your email that says like, you've got to go to something run by this woman, like, they're not going to do anything but just go, oh my goodness, what in the world?
Have to, and that's what I'm guessing is where this Pride Night came from, is like, they come up with these ideas, and of course all the people on there are rolling their eyes and like, all right, let's do Pride Night where we go out and skate in rainbow. I didn't even see the jersey. I don't even know what happened.
Neither do I. Yeah.
But it's bizarre. It's just, it's kind of like,
do you think this woman is just like, takes herself seriously, or is she the like, man, this is like pretty great. I got this stupid job that they're not going to fire me and no one cares about, and so I can just basically collect a paycheck? Or do you think that she's like really,
she's probably an ideologue,
a true believer?
Like, I don't know that you get that job by just showing up.
Yeah, I'm sure she's an ideologue and like follow, but like, you don't like, how do you take it seriously? Like, super, like, or at least not realize that everyone else thinks that your job is stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, because she probably does know, but she probably also thinks she's doing good work, and these are all backwards racist people, and yeah, she's got to do it. It'd be kind of be like if they put me in charge to make a company more libertarian. It's like, oh, this is a fun challenge. Let's, all right, we got all these normies I got to talk to every day. How do I position my thoughts to get these normies to see what I, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it must be funny to be like, all right, you go into a locker room or something, and it's like, we need to make you guys more diverse. And like, there's four translators in there for like all the
yeah, I know. I will, like, and I,
it's an international sport.
Yeah, baseball is pretty diverse, and so is hockey.
Yeah, but like, just because it's not the diversity. I mean, we all know. We all know what the deal is.
It's more diverse if you have a bunch of people from Philadelphia who are Asian, black, and white than if you have people from all over the world who have the same color skin.
Right.
We already know.
Yeah. It's just such a joke. But the other day, I guess a week or so ago, they did some, I don't know, for lack of a better term, we're calling it gay night. And I guess they had to wear something on some sort of warm-up jerseys that were gay in some way. And I guess they noticed that one of the players, defenseman Ivan Provorov, did not take part in the warm-ups. He was not out on the ice. And I guess they asked the coach, John Tortorella, after the game, like, well, what's the deal? Provorov wasn't out for the warm-ups, but he played in the game. And Tortorella said that he didn't want to be part of it. He was being true to himself and true to his religion.
And that's just a way to
basically
cover
what
for
his
bigotry.
Quote, what his answer was. I don't know if they asked Provorov, like you said, we're not really following the news, not, you know, watching this stuff right now. So I don't know what Provorov, I'm sure they asked him after the game. I don't know what he said, but, and since we haven't been following the news, I have no idea if this is like a thing
if it's still a story. It might be over.
Yeah, I just kind of assumed it would not. No one would care.
Yeah.
Which I think is overall kind of good because it just shows that gay night was stupid.
Yeah.
And like no one really cares.
Right.
Because no one cares. Like, you know what, like, you know what the average person's thinking when they're watching a hockey game is, hey, that's my favorite player, so-and-so. I really hope he's not gay.
Like, I hope he's a Democrat.
Yeah.
Like, no one cares.
That's what's, like, great about sports is that you understand, or, like, you look at football, there's a 53-man roster, plus all the coaching staff. Do you think they're all, like, in lockstep with political agreements or any, like,
they
whatever?
Have a job. And it's a very high pressure job, and there's high stakes in the sense that it's not like, you know, you don't perform, you're gone. There's no probationary period. Right. There's no like the joke, the NFL is not for long. Like, you don't have much time there. The second someone else is better than you, you're gone. There's no seniority. There's no anything. They don't care about your politics.
Yeah.
They care about winning and getting better.
And you have to, like, a good team has to be just that, a team. And you got to, like, have each other's backs and get along and work together. Now, obviously, not everyone's going to be, you know, best friends on the team. There's going to be, you know, some guys might not get along. But overall, like, you got to work together. And if you're, you know, in the trenches or like, if, you know, we're talking about hockey, if you don't like that your defense partner is a Democrat, you got to get over that because you're going to spend a lot of time with them, working with them, and trusting each other.
And the reality is, say that was the case, they'd probably joke about it and still work together and still put their body on the line for the other guy.
Right. And that's like, that's why one of the reasons why I think like sports are an overall good, because they teach like good lessons like that.
I've learned way more playing sports than I did in any classroom ever.
Yeah. And that's why, like, if your kid's playing, Pee Wee football or something, then homework is optional. Homework counts
that's
as like
right.
a hobby. And
you should put that off and focus on your sports.
Yep. Get rid of all distractions. Mm-hmm. Go read great insights on that. Go read Determined Look.
Yeah, anyone who's coaching youth sports, it's a must-read.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're just a parent of a kid in youth sports and you just want to understand what a good coach is.
What goes into winning championships when you're a seven-year-old.
It's funny because there's a lot of people that unironically are like that. What's in that?
And sadly, but yeah.
Everyone's kids going to the NHL or the MLB or the NFL. That's funny. But anyway, you might have been starting to get things in the mail, which is, or email or notifications when you log on to certain things, that your tax forms are getting ready, because tax season is kind
of
coming up.
Time of year.
Yep. Well, we got about a little bit less than 3 months before taxes are due. And since we're doing the Get On Zero thing, taxes is always kind of a thing that comes up. And we've talked about it a little bit before. And up until this point, or last year's tax cycle, the strategy that you're still using is that you're not selling any Bitcoin, because when you get a paycheck, you're paying all your expenses off, and then the rest of it goes into Bitcoin. Whereas now, so last year I didn't incur any taxes that had to do with any of my Bitcoins. I never sold any. But this year I've been doing a different strategy where the entirety of my paycheck, as soon as it comes in, gets converted to Bitcoin, and I just sell Bitcoin as I need to pay off my expenses and everything. And so now there's the question of paying taxes in the Bitcoin, how to do strategy on that. And also, one of the things I did last year was I converted an IRA to Bitcoin. I did not do like a Bitcoin IRA or something for this. I just
took the penalty, paid the taxes, converted it to Bitcoin.
But when I decided to do that, it was towards the end of the year. It was the end of 2021. And so I liquidated half of it at the end of December, and then the other half at the end of or the beginning of January, just so that I could split up how much I was paying in taxes. Because when you liquidate an IRA, there's a penalty.
Income, right?
What's it, like a 10%?
There's a 10% penalty, but does that roll into your earned income in that year? So would that have affected your tax bracket?
That is earned income, so it sure did. And I did not want to pay. I think it would have put me, like, it already put me in another tax bracket, and I think it would have put me in an even higher tax bracket if I did it all at once. So, because I was deciding to do this at the end of the year, and I was concerned that, you know, I don't want to wait for this because Bitcoin could shoot through the roof by the time I hold off and wait. Like, let's say this was in February and I decided to do this, you know, waiting 10 months to liquidate the 401k would have been, or the IRA would have been, you know.
Yeah. Could it potentially now, could have been.
Yeah. Hindsight's 2020 and the price ended up going down. But, you know, we don't know that. And our kind of basis.
We weren't expecting it, or at least I wasn't.
Right. The basis for getting on zero is that we think that the price is going to go up, and we want to be all in as soon as possible to catch that. So, you know, I have no qualms or no regrets about what I did as far as the timing that way. But that's like one thing. If you've got like a sizable chunk of money that, if you're like liquidating a 401k or an IRA to put it into Bitcoin, and you're not doing like a Bitcoin IRA or like a self-directed thing where you can hold Bitcoin and use it as an IRA. These are things to think about, because how are you going to pay? You know, that tax bill is going to come, and it's going to come hard depending on, you know, the size of that. So you have like that, was it 10% penalty plus the, plus it's just, you know, tax at a very high rate.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the price of Bitcoin crashes right when your tax bills do, and you got to liquidate some Bitcoin and a lot of it, stuff that you might sell, you might kind of be in the red or in the hole for it. So you kind of want to avoid that. You want to have a good strategy. Now, what my strategy was I had a home equity line of credit available to me. And I am using that to pay the tax bills on that, because, you know, I kind of my my basis for buying Bitcoin with that IRA is it's not just the price that I bought it at. I'm also taking into account and adding the amount of taxes. So if, let's say, you know, I bought $1,000 worth of Bitcoin and I had to pay, and I got, you know, 10 Bitcoin out of that. I'm just using stupid numbers. So $1,000, 10 Bitcoin, or $10 per Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, close. You might want to work on the math, though.
Yeah, I forgot what I said. What was it? I bought 100 Bitcoin, or did I?
Sure. Bitcoin, you said 10, but whatever. Just a couple zeros. Just change them around.
I couldn't remember what the was it the price or the amount of? All right. I'm going to start over. I liquidated a $1,000 IRA and bought 10 Bitcoin. So it is $100 per Bitcoin is my basis.
Yeah.
And then I have to pay taxes on that. And let's say I have to pay $300 in taxes. So what I'm doing is that I'm adding that $300 to the $100, $300 to the $1,000 to get to $1,300. And then dividing that by 10, because that's the number of Bitcoins I have, and using that as the basis. So it really means I bought that Bitcoin for $130. So I have to pay taxes. I have to pay that $300. But if the price of Bitcoin is still below $100, if I have to sell off Bitcoin in order to get that, then I'm like kind of in the red or in the hole for that. I don't want to pay that tax bill off, or, you know, the associated debt I'm incurring that tax bill, until the price of Bitcoin goes above $130 per Bitcoin. I know I have to pay this bill, but I can delay it. So if I know I have to pay it at some point, then, but I've just said this, these three things four times in a row. So if I know I have to pay this off at some point, but I can delay it, then I want to delay it at least to a point when I know that, like, I'm maximizing how much Bitcoin I'm gonna get. And then, I mean, you could, depending on what your ability to get credit is and put off this payment, you could delay it till way past that. But I at least want to be able to I'm struggling to get what's in my, and I've talked about this before, struggling to kind of get what's in my head out words. You kind of understand what I'm saying, Slappy? Yeah. So I guess this only counts if you're using using some debt.
What you're saying is, yeah, you have a bill coming and you want to delay paying it as long as possible in the hopes that the Bitcoin price goes up so that when you pay it, you're in a better spot than you were.
Yeah, but you also have to take into account the tax bill.
The tax that you're going to pay, yeah.
And what that does for, like, what your kind of the value over the true value of the Bitcoin that right. you bought, because I was expending $1,000 to buy that Bitcoin, but mm-hmm. the reality of it is that I would, because of the tax bill, well.
Yes.
There's another $300. So the total cost of that, I was at that time, I was buying Bitcoin at a higher price.
Yes, than because you have to pay the tax for. On that.
So, yeah. So for the purposes of, like, keeping myself struggling to get this all out, but Yeah, I just want to, like, the dollar amount that I owe is going to stay the same.
Right.
Outside of, like, interest on it and stuff. But the amount of Bitcoin I can buy at a given time is not going to be the same. Like, every paycheck I make $100. But depending on what the price of Bitcoin is, that $100 is going to purchase a different amount of Bitcoin. So if I know I have to spend that, pay that $300 or something, then I want to make sure it's at a point where the value of my dollars is going to buy a whole lot less Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, like, just try to figure out how you want to manage that. Because you don't want to, like, accumulate, depending on what, like, your interest rate is for the credit that you have, you don't want to accumulate, like, a massive amount of debt and interest, have that start piling up on you. But at the same time, you know, if you think the price of Bitcoin is going to go up,
you can pay off that debt when it does.
Yeah. So delay, if you can delay that payment. Long enough. So, yeah, I guess all I'm trying to say is I just made it way more confusing to myself, and by extension, everyone else that's listening, is that just consider what the value of your dollar gets you, and that your debt, kind of outside of interest changing how much you owe, your debt amount stays the same in terms of dollars, but the amount of Bitcoin that you can buy with that dollar does not change. So, pay your debts off, you know, as long as you can stay solvent and you have cash flow coming in that can service the debt if you need to, you should try just pushing that off as long as you can. Now there reaches a point where you need to start paying it. And that's mostly because, you know, your line of credit might run out. You might not have all of the funds available at a certain point. So you need to start, or in the case, you know, maybe I want to use that line of credit for something else. Maybe there's some property I want to buy or something, and I want to use that because it's got a decent interest rate for me to use it for that, or some other big purchase or something. Maybe you got to buy a car or something, and you want to use that line of credit for that, or whatever it is. When you're timing that out, you need to, you know, figure out when you want to clear that out. You don't want to necessarily hold on to it forever and ever and ever. So this just gives you, by adding that tax bill, the amount of taxes you owe
into
for that
price.
Bitcoin transaction onto the total price, it gives you, like, a decently, like, rough idea of being like, all right, well, if I have to pay this off kind of sooner rather than later, then, you know, what's the most bang for my buck, for my dollars that I'm going to be doing? I guess that's a little bit better way.
Sure.
Does that start making more sense?
A little bit.
All right.
I think I get the drift.
Yeah. So one of the another things I did was that, and for those that, like, you might not know it, but the IRS will allow you to do a payment plan. And that's what I did last year, and I'll probably do it again this year.
How long do they give you? A year?
So it depends. There is a short-term payment plan and a long-term payment option. And it's kind of weird how they set it up, because if it's less than $50,000, you can do a long-term payment plan. Ironically, if it's more than $50,000, then it is a short-term payment plan. The short-term payment plan is 120 days, I think. So you have 3 months.
If it's more than $50,000, you have 3 weeks to pay it back?
3 months.
How are you going to do that? So, I mean, I guess they're assuming if you owe 50 grand in tax, you have some assets and money.
The trick you can do is pay enough of your tax bill to get it below $50,000, and then submit an application for the long-term payment plan, which you then tell them how much you want to pay each month. And then
you get to tell them?
Yes.
And they just accept? You could be like $20?
I don't know about that, but if you said something that low, then your interest rate's probably going to be like super insane because they do charge you penalties and interest.
Okay.
So it's something that you have to like add in, like figure out that like, all right, well,
I'm never paying taxes again and just paying $20 a month.
So for me, when I did that, I was like, all right, well, I got to make it like legit.
Yeah.
So I did. And like, I don't know what they'll do if they'll say, like, review my thing and be like, whoa, you can afford way more than what you're paying. I don't know. Paying monthly, that is.
Aren't they hiring like 89,000 more people? So maybe someone will call.
Yeah, but I think that's to track your Venmo.
Your Venmo exchanges. Yeah.
That's a great advertisement for Bitcoin, though. By the way. Sure is. Yeah, you're not gonna be able to trade peer to peer, but you know, Venmo and PayPal, they're gonna start charging taxes on it. Okay. What's that Bitcoin thing again?
Yep.
But yeah, so there's those payment plan options that could come in handy. And so you got to look and try to understand the penalty and the interest rate that they're charging you. And it's not, at least for me, it's not like insane. So what I do is I have my home equity line of credit that I that every time that tax bill's due, I just tap into that and hold that debt. Until there's a point where the price of Bitcoin hits my thing where it's like, all right, it now makes more sense for me to pay off the debt because of the price of where Bitcoin is than it is for me to keep piling up the Bitcoin as opposed to paying that debt off. So I'll pay the rest of that penalty and the taxes this year for the rest of the 401k or the IRA. And then I'll kind of see. I'll look and see like, all right, do I just use my HELOC to totally pay my tax bill and then just pay the interest rate and pay down that debt at, you know, whatever rate I decide to? Or do I continue on a payment plan with the IRS? And that's going to be something I have to compare kind of the interest rate of the IRS payment versus what my HELOC's doing. And what makes that difficult is that the HELOC is a variable interest rate. So,
yeah.
But
it's all interest only payments for 10 years or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good. Because I have a drawdown period of 10 years.
Yeah.
And just paying interest, for 10 years.
What's it going to, like a 20-year loan after that? So, and it's whatever interest rate at the time, though.
Yeah. But like, so it's just something I'll just have to keep an eye on and say, like, all right, does it make sense for me to.
Yeah.
Like, how much of this principal do I want to pay down? Because I might want to access that line of credit for something, too. So, yeah, if.
And you don't know what the future is going to hold. Another thing you could do is take out another line of home equity line of credit and pay off the 20-year loan if you wanted, you know, and then you have the interest-only payments again.
Right. But the key is, in all of this, and we've talked about it before, is that you need to have good cash flow.
Yeah.
You cannot allow yourself to get in a position where you've got debt payments piling up and you have no way to pay it off. Like, if I needed to just immediately service this debt and, you know, pay it back based on whatever arrangement that they're going to give me as what I agreed to, like, I'm prepared to do that. And if I'm ever in a position where that's going to change, or I might not be able to do that, then I need to, you know, take whatever steps I need to make sure that I'm going to stay solvent.
Yeah.
I mean, there is debt and credit are tremendous tools that when I realized what I could do with the home equity line of credit, I was surprised because I was like, this seems unfair. It is because it's, you know, that line of credit just kind of came out of nowhere. As far as where the money came from. But these are tremendous things that can help you steer clear of or navigate a lot of tax situations, or just helps you acquire the hard asset that's going to appreciate in value over time, and not hold on to the stupid dollars and everything. So it's a tremendous tool, but you can't let yourself get over, you know, lean out over your skis too much, because you'll get wrecked, and you don't want to have to start liquidating big amounts of Bitcoin, because chances are it's not going to be at a favorable Bitcoin price for you. You have to kind of assume the worst there. So, you know, the hope is that, you know, things will work out real well, and, you know, well, things should work out pretty well for me if I'm just paying interest payments for 10 years on this HELOC. And over the course of 10 years, I'm hoping that the price of Bitcoin goes up by a decent amount. And I think it's a fair bet to say over the course of 10 years that it will. And so by the time it's ready for me to just start making principal payments, or even just at some point in this 10 years moving forward, that this interest payment is going to be kind of like peanuts. Well, it's just, we have no reason to think that they're going to like start pulling back on inflation. And so just my general, you know, the amount of my cash flow coming in, the HELOC payment is going to just be a smaller amount in terms of, in real terms versus, just the number. So that's good. And then they just reach a point where I could just either say like, yeah, I just don't care. I could just hold on to this debt forever because the payment's really not that big of a deal because the value of the dollar is so low, or just say like, you know what, I'm just going to wipe it all out with one fell swoop because the value of it in dollar terms is just like this, such a small fraction of my Bitcoin holdings. So, but we'll see. There's some risk here, but, I have the cash flows to be able to manage it. So Slappy, though, so I'm going to get on zero criticisms I've seen. Is it like, taxes are theft, though?
True.
Right. Like, yes. But to those people, it's like, I really don't have any time for someone whose criticism of what we're doing is that taxes are theft and you shouldn't pay taxes. Okay, yes, I agree. We shouldn't pay taxes, but the people that say that and just are really indignant and aggressive about it, like they're either like 14 and don't have a job, or they're 34 and don't have a job.
Right.
Like, you know, whether or not you're
you're not going to be, I mean, I know you're never going to accumulate any assets and provide something for your family and totally avoid taxes.
Right. Whether you're taking your paycheck in Bitcoin or not,
like, you're paying taxes.
Right. Unless you're like under the table.
Which, and then, you know, there's some people that make a living on that, but then you're scraping by. I mean, it's hard to make a lot of money under the table.
Right. So the best thing to do is to like learn a skill and get good at it so you can command a decent, you know, salary for it or paycheck for it. You know, just trying to do, like you said, scraping by working under the table. and you're not going to pay taxes, but you're probably going to earn a lot less doing it that way than you would having a marketable skill that you pay taxes on for your paycheck. I mean, you're still, if I were to try to transition into just working under the table doing whatever, I would not come close to the table.
No. It's not
remotely close. So you're telling me that it would be better for me not to pay.
And by the way, not one less missile would be bought or dropped if you stopped paying your taxes.
Right.
It's not like because you're working, we now have this military industrial complex, So you could feel good about yourself and not pay taxes, but then you're in a worse position.
Yep.
And you're not making any change.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you're not using Bitcoin as your money, you holding dollars is what gives them the ability to do all that kind of stuff. It's not their ability to tax you so much. It's your use of dollars and holding on to it. And the fact that you're taking some dollars out of the supply and holding them as savings or whatever is that allows them to print more because you're withholding the dollars from the market. So it just makes it doubly worse for you. It's just kind of a silly criticism because it doesn't yes, taxes are bad, but I don't know how you effectively avoid them without drastically lowering your standard of living, quality of life.
Right.
So sometimes you have to look in the dark abyss of reality and realize there are no perfect answers, but we wouldn't be paying taxes if they were optional. And like I just said earlier, is that there are ways to, have a tax bill, but delay paying it. So we were talking mostly about, taxation related to the IRA liquidation. But what about if you're on zero and you got, you're doing that strategy where you're buying Bitcoin and selling it to pay off your expenses and everything, what do you have? And I haven't gone through this yet. I haven't sat down to do my taxes yet. So we'll cover this again after I do that, just to kind of see what I actually did. But, my strategy now is that, you have a certain basis for when you bought the Bitcoin at, and there's capital gains taxes you're going to have to pay. And if it's short-term capital gains, which is you've held on to that Bitcoin, that specific Bitcoin, for less than a year, then it's treated as normal income. And that means you pay normal income tax on it. If you hold it for longer than a year, it's long-term capital gains. And I think it's 10% is the first bracket?
Yeah, something like that.
And there's a 15% bracket after that. So
yeah. Sounds right.
Depending on how long you've been doing this, you probably have purchased Bitcoin at a lot of different prices. And for me, I started getting on zero back when it was at its all-time high, so $60,000+. So what's nice about the way the tax structure is that you can pick. You don't have to claim that you're selling the Bitcoin. The first Bitcoin you're selling is not the first.
The UTXO that you sell doesn't matter.
Right. It's all about picking the tax bases. And so just because you bought Bitcoin, the first Bitcoin you bought does not necessarily have to be the first Bitcoin that you sell. So you are afforded the ability to pick and choose what you are saying you are selling. Picking from that lot of those lots of Bitcoin that you have. So that means you can claim a loss. So if you bought Bitcoin at $20,000, at $25,000, and at $15,000, and again at $20,000, you know, you can, and you sell at $20,000, you can pick whatever you want to of those purchases. Yeah. To calculate and your
might make sense in some years to take the gain, other years to take the loss, but
right. If you maybe don't have a lot of income that year, then it might be a reason to take the gain. Or maybe you just want to say, you know what, I bought some Bitcoin at 20,000, I sold 20,000, I want to just skate right through as even.
Yeah.
If you have a lot of income and you're trying to lower your tax bill, then, you know, try to take the loss. Now, you're limited on how much losses you can take. And I think it's, or how many losses you can take in a given year.
Yeah. And I don't know what the number is.
$3,000.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the number is.
But what you can do is you can carry, if you go over $3,000 in losses, you can only claim $3,000 for that given year and then can carry it over.
Following year.
Right. So, you know, for someone like me that I started buying in the high 60s with, you know, it might be tempting to say like, oh, well, I'll just, when I'm selling Bitcoin now, I will use the lots that I bought when it was at $60,000 so I can take a huge loss on it. But that might not be a good strategy because, you know, if I'm taking, you know, let's say I'm taking a $4,000 loss on that Bitcoin. So I can take $3,000 this year as losses and subtract that from my income and then carry over the $1,000 for the next year. And that's all well and good, but there might be times later on, let's say, you know, the price of Bitcoin goes back up and now the price is at $75,000 and I need to sell some Bitcoin. Well, I lost the ability to use that Bitcoin from when it was in the 60s.
Right.
So now maybe I'm having to sell, if you will, the Bitcoin I bought when it was $40,000. So now I've got a huge gain on that. And maybe it's in the same year. And so now I'm paying like a, you know, a lot more taxes on that than if I could, if I, you know, use the stuff when it was in the 60s. So I think it's important to kind of pay attention to what you're doing and strategize well and try not to, I would try to kind of harvest your, you know, reasonable, you want to take losses on it because you want to minimize your tax bill.
Save some of that higher price Bitcoin.
Yes. Try to use the lowest price you can do to get that, just so you can have the higher price Bitcoin for when the price goes up, that you're going to be able to take advantage of those higher, lots that you have. And the benefit of that too is if I wait, I guess it's already over a year since it's been $60,000, right?
Yeah. It was October. So
that would be a long-term capital gain too.
Right.
So if I take I don't want to take a loss on that long-term capital gain when I have losses available in the short term, because when the price starts shooting back up, I can pay less taxes on that long-term stuff. So that's what I'm thinking right now. I gotta sit everything, lay everything out, and figure out how I want to do this. But I'm gonna try to just kind of isolate what I've held for over a year, or what I bought over a year ago, and see how I can kind of connect dots to. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to hopefully incur some losses next year too. So that's the thing you don't want to do. You don't want to like be rolling your losses over indefinitely. Because then you're really not getting that benefit from it. And being able to, you know, because if you, let's say you take $20,000 in losses this year and you've got to roll that, roll those losses out over 6 years, 6 or 7 years, $3,000 in 6 years is going to be worth a lot less than today.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want.
Yeah. You want to be careful about the losses.
Right. Yeah. So.
And you can, you know, get some of that low basis off your spreadsheet by selling some in high and low, take a, you know, kind of mix it up. And then you don't have to worry when the price goes through the roof and you're selling that $2,000 Bitcoin you bought.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you want to get rid of the low stuff as soon as you can, because you might get stuck with that.
Yeah, you want the higher bit. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, playing Hearts, the card game.
Yeah.
It's, you want to get rid of your hearts kind of early.
You don't want to be stuck with it at the end.
Your queen of spades. You don't want to like be sitting there and you've only got, high number cards and they're all hearts. Because you're going to just have to eat all that. You're not going to be able, you're going to control every hand and not control every hand, but you're going to have to start every hand and you've only got high cards and everyone else has already dumped their high cards and they're just going to be playing low cards. And you're going to keep winning hand after hand after hand. Yeah. You don't want to be winning in hearts. You don't want to win the hand. Yeah. You got to be very strategic about the hands that you win. That's actually a pretty good analogy. I haven't played Hearts in forever.
It's been a long, been a long time for me.
It used to be on Windows.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah, you could play the computer, but yeah, that's it's a way to do it. Be strategic about the high cards you play. And try to get rid of them. Well, actually, I guess it's the opposite.
Just be strategic.
Yeah, yeah. In hearts, you want to get rid of the high cards first.
Early.
With this, you want to get rid of your low cards first. With harvesting your tax losses with Bitcoin. But whatever. I think the point's been made. And I've already been confused myself enough that we should probably just wrap it up.
We'll just leave it.
A lot easier talking about eagles.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But, I forced myself to talk through this like this because I'm going to, have to field a lot of questions in real life, if you will, from people. And
once the press gets at you.
Yeah. But no, people are going to want to know as this kind of becomes more popular. And so, sorry, listeners, but you are the kind of the
beneficiary.
Yeah. 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 No, you're kind of the practice grounds for me to get these ideas out and flesh them and try to think about how to talk about it and make the point. So that's why it's very repetitive in the same episode, because the brain's spinning around and, I'll think about this kind of stuff at work and be like, wow, this sounds great in my head right now. Then it's time to sit on a podcast and just start going. Oh, it's a little bit more difficult now, but hopefully you learned something. Hopefully, if you haven't thought about this stuff and are thinking of different strategies, then hopefully this will be of benefit to you. We get the wheels turning and everything. And also the reason that we talk out loud about this stuff is that if someone else has an idea and says, oh, you're doing it this way, well, if you adjust this, you can gain a little advantage there.
Yeah.
So we want audience participation.
That's right.
So, all right, that's about everything I got before I start rambling nonsensically. And
incoherently
terrified of doing Get on Zero because that's all I got. So Slappy, you have anything?
No, I got that was good. My tax is going to be easy this year.
Yeah,
next year might not be, though. I've been using that HELOC and may want to pay some of it down. So
That'll be interesting to see how all that stuff works. So we'll be in touch, listeners. Talk about how our
taxes
go this year. It's funny. We went from being one of those people that scream about taxation being theft.
Which it still is.
Right. Do we have to give that, like, oh, by the way, we're not financial advisors?
We can, because we're not. And this is... Yeah, definitely speak to your accountant. We can't give tax advice and all that jazz. Don't listen to anything we say. Talk to your professionals.
Yeah. Does that actually mean anything? Like, because
it's a disclaimer. It's obviously legal departments tell them to do that.
Yeah, because it's like every time you hear someone, it's like, oh, you got it. But like, it's silly.
I can tell you, well, in my business, so insurance carriers, for example, depending on how you pay your premium for your disability coverage, if you have individual disability coverage, if your company pays for it with pre-tax dollars, the benefit's taxable. If you pay for it with after-tax dollars, the benefit, assuming you go on claim, is a tax-free benefit. But the insurance companies don't report to the IRS, so it's kind of up to you and your attorney. So you could, why that matters too is if your company's paying for it, you're eligible for an additional benefit. Since it's a taxable benefit, you're only going to be taking home less. So you could kind of game the system and say your company's paying for it on the application. They issue a bigger benefit. And then maybe you're paying for it after tax or your company's paying for it. But we don't report. We know companies report to the IRS, so it's up to you and your accountant. And when your accountant signs that tax return, he's putting a signature on there that he is certifying it's legit. So, and I believe that ultimately it falls on the taxpayer. Again, I'm not legal advice here. But so regardless of what you hear anywhere, it's still up to you to file your taxes properly and your accountant to sign it that he reviewed it or she reviewed it and so I don't know that it's necessary, but it's like I think legal departments always just say that this is not tax advice.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the shame of it, too, is that taxes are so convoluted.
That you need a professional?
That what?
That you need a professional.
Yeah. Like, it's insane. Like, how much of our time and energy and resources are we going to use just to figure out how much we,
how much the government says we
is claiming them. It owns of us.
And depending on who your accountant is and what deductions and exemptions they can find, it's like you pay a different amount, but as long as it's up to the code, you're good. And it's just such a weird system.
Yeah. There's a lot of other things I would rather be doing than figuring out how to harvest losses. But here we are. It is what it is. Like,
and then the other thing, which would be interesting too, is like, what proof do you need? Because like when you're doing miles, if you're deducting miles, all you need is like a logbook. Like nobody like checks your car or as far as I know.
Right.
Cause that's what I hand my accountant, my logbook of miles. And, so I don't know, like, what is even required for proof that you bought at X number of dollars? Like, if you bought Bitcoin, you were hodling for a long time. I mean, and I know, we bought some Bitcoin when it was really inexpensive, although we didn't feel that way at the time. How do you prove that? You just say you bought it?
I guess you need, like, you would have to have it produce a bill of sale, right?
I think they just take your word.
I think, well, that's if you don't get, like, yeah, I think they just take your word for it. If you get audited,
you'll have to show something, but I don't know what the default, because there's Bitcoin I bought that I have no, I don't even know how to find a record of it.
Right. I mean, but the tax basis for that is like,
yeah, I'll take whatever basis they want to give me.
Right.
I don't know what the default is. Like, they might be like, no, then the basis is zero. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, that would stink.
Yeah.
But at least anyway, it's long term at this point.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's convoluted. It's annoying. But you go to prison, potentially, if you do it wrong, so...
So don't do that.
Yeah, just try to keep yourself out of prison.
Yeah.
So I think once I like sit down and actually do this, I'll be able to speak more clearly about it.
Intelligently about it.
Yeah, I've done it, and it was actually very helpful to put the numbers once I got the numbers right about like the IRA thing, with how I was going to saying that, like, oh, you have to add the taxes to the amount that you bought. And really, that's just to give you an idea of like, okay, well, when should I pay this off versus does it make sense for me to just buy more Bitcoin? Always makes sense to buy Bitcoin, but when you have obligations you have to pay off eventually, then it's good to have a strategy for it.
Yeah.
So, all right. We just went over an hour, 2 minutes ago. So, show notes page for this episode is mcfluga.com/341. We don't really have any links there, but unless you want to follow us on Twitter that we're not posting to for a while. But, yeah, that's all I got. So thanks for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Peace.